WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into football season, and we have spent plenty of time talking some Ravens football around here. But you know, Don and I put this social studies course together at Baltimore Positive to bring local people, local influencer, and there is plenty of sports in this segment because we have a sporting type, as we will 2 weeks from now on October the 8th when the Maryland Crab Cake Tour takes it to the road, but not really the road, bringing it home to Baltimore. We're going to be at Coco's over. I think we call that Lauraville. I call that near where Resig lives and where my Uncle Nelson raised me over off of Tyndale Avenue when where Martin O'Malley lived. Coco's on the 8th of October with our mayor, Brandon Scott, will be doing that. Also, a shout out to all of our sponsors, Damie and all of our friends down at Fadley's. We were down there last week at a Crab Cake on Monday with my pal. And I got my State Fair gear rocking. Evan was on the program this week talking about the menu at the Beaumont, talking a little football, talking a little chefery, talking about our favorite foods. And I know we always make you hungry, Don, when we talk about State Fair and the Beaumont over there in the Ville, right?
Absolutely. I'm heading to the Beaumont in the next week or two. If folks haven't been there,
go get a steak. Just go get a steak.
I mean, maybe the best. And we have a lot of great steakhouses in the region, in Baltimore and other areas. The Beaumont steak and filet is right near the top. Outstanding stuff. Well, we have, Nestor, a special guest today. One of our favorite guests, friend of the show, Delegate Sandy Rosenberg, 41st District, Baltimore City, over there by Pimlico, as Charlie Ekman would say.
Hi, ho.
The one and only Pimlico. Sandy, what I love about having you on is you are truly the class historian. When you've been in Annapolis for almost 50 years.
No, 40, please. 40. 40.
Well, all right, 40 years. You have seen it all. You have seen it all.
And if I may, since you mentioned Lauraville and Charlie Ekman, would he refer to it as lovely Laurelville?
Lovely
Laurelville. Because he referred to Laurel that way.
Before we get to all things political, and my goodness, there's a lot going on. And boy, do I want to talk to you about Texas and Roe v. Wade, because you were so important in what Maryland did many, many moons ago. I want you to give us a little history lesson. But before we do that, you are certainly one of Maryland's number one Baltimore Oriole fans. We have suffered through. We're going to lose roughly 110 games. Some of us think there's light at the end of the tunnel. How are you feeling about the rebuild at this point, Sandy?
Well, there's a Sun article that says the better players will be matriculating with the big club next year. Matriculating? When Earl Weaver called in his 25th player, guy like Tommy Chopay, and said, "You're going to the big club. You're going to be with us this year." I don't think he said it was matriculating.
I don't think Earl could spell matriculating.
You didn't matriculate from Rochester. You just left.
Well, but you were better. You got a better education there than guys do now. Because I used to go to Orioles fantasy camp, and I was at the bar one night with Boog Powell and Mike, the late Mike Flanagan. And they said, guys come to the show, to the big leagues now, with less experience and know less about the game. And nowadays, even though I voted for it, they're going to know more about sports wagering than they're going to know about what they should do when there's a man on first and you're up by two runs in the top of the ninth, and the fact that you don't worry about that runner and you worry about the batter.
Well, this is fascinating, Sandy, because, I didn't want to go into – we're going to talk politics. We're going to talk Pimlico and all that. But I did a piece this week on sports wagering and football. I was out in Vegas 2 weeks ago with the Ravens, right, and saw what all of that is. I am fascinated for a guy your age and Don's age who still love baseball and watch it. I still want to love it. I just can't. It's just no good. What's out there right now, this is not worth my time. And I make that very, very clear on a daily basis. But the issue for baseball, when I do put it on, there's a pretty girl telling me to wager on an app and like all this stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, I've been here a long time. I've had a radio station 30 years, my 30th year on the radio, chasing the Orioles back when the Orioles mattered. I don't know anyone that really bet on baseball. I mean, I knew a lot of degenerate football people and pool people and people that flew to Vegas and people that loved to wager and people that play blackjack and people that play craps and people that can't play golf without wagering. I know people that bet on stuff, but I don't know many people that bet on baseball. And this notion that like they're going to resurrect the game, and you just said something like, ah, the kids are going to bet on it, but they're not going to understand it. I don't know. I'm worried for baseball for all the above. Man on second base in the 10th inning, 7-inning games. Just no one running the show for me. The star power gone away. I'm very, very worried about the leadership. And we talk about leadership in politics and in this country and who leads us. Baseball's got some leadership issues, in my opinion.
Well, I think all of the sports, the major sports, are getting in bed with sports wagering because it's a money maker for them. And they want their share of the pie. But I'll tell you, the example I gave is not hypothetical. Oriole game a few years ago, Zach Britton was still with us. He's pitching top of the ninth. The people who had gone to the game with me had left. So I'm making conversation with the 20-somethings near me in my section. First guy reaches, we're up by two runs. I say to these guys, you don't worry about this guy. He can score. You want to keep the batter at first base, keep the double play in order. If there's a ball hit to the offensive, oh no, they said. They didn't say it, but then I realized that run mattered for their bet. Okay, and this is before it was legal in Maryland. So, you know, there, it ain't going to be less of this stuff going on. It's going to be.
Andy, I hate it. I think you are really on to. And Nestor, we'll actually do quite a bit of this when we talk on the.
What do you hate? You don't use the word hate much.
Well, I don't. No, that's why I said I was surprised to hear you. I didn't know we were going down the sports betting road here. We'll get to other things.
Well, I'm trying to be educated on it. Person on the radio, talking to people, I don't really. I'm not a gambler like that. So maybe it's something you have to experience to be a part of in that way.
Well, there was just an article recently as we get ready to have this sit down with our friend, Delegate Sandy Rosenberg, that Major League Baseball is now going to work closely with teams and states to identify. And this is where I don't think you get the genie back in the bottle, Sandy, and maybe you talk about it a little bit. They're going to try to regulate what you can and can't bet on. For example, the article pointed out they're very worried about a bet that would say, we're going to allow you to bet on whether the first pitch of the game is a ball or a strike. They find that, and I'll tell you what I found intriguing about their concern. I thought it was like, really? We're going to, you know, they said, well, there's an awful lot of opportunity there for an individual to be corrupted or be tempted. And my take is, and Sandy, that would have been a tough vote for me. I thought a lot about sports gambling. I opposed casinos, and a lot of my good friends are very much involved in the casino operation. I know for Governor O'Malley, it was a matter of principle for him. And I always thought there are certain times I thought in Governor O'Malley where you could really see his sort of religious upbringing rear its head. And I think Martin would agree with that. And he couldn't get
past. Saw it on death penalty.
Oh, absolutely.
Death penalty. Well, we went round and round with death penalty with Martin here.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, there are times
his advisors wanted him to stay back, but he moved forward on that.
It's one of the things I really respect about Governor O'Malley is you would see that principle-centered leadership come through more often than not. But I think I'm probably tainted, and then I'm going to shut up and let you talk about sports betting and why you ended up being a yes. We had family friends who had someone in their family, in their close circle, really disrupt their life through a gambling issue. And I really worry, you talk about the 20-somethings in your section, Sandy, and what they can do with just a phone sitting there and the money.
It's a way to wreck a life.
You know, oh my gosh. You know, and it scares me to death, whether it's FanDuel or any of the other sites. I just worry that these kids with credit cards are just going to wake up one day and their life is going to be a mess because of this. What am I missing, Sandy? What's the bigger picture?
Well, a percentage of the revenue does go to compulsive gambling. We do. That's the case with slots and table games. And it would be interesting to find out what has happened, what we've done with that money, what impact has it had? Has there been an increase in the number of people who have been afflicted with compulsive gambling? But if we're not going to raise taxes, if we're not going to have a more equitable income tax, then this is how we're going to get revenue to do the things that I think government should be doing. You know, we're not going to pay for the Kerwin plan. We're not going to build Camden Yards. That wasn't done with taxpayer dollars. That was done with slots money. Excuse me.
Lottery.
Lottery money. Lottery money. So if we're not going to go in that direction, this is an important way. This is the way we're going to raise additional money for important things.
Yeah, so I hear.
You know, the most.
I just worry. And I'm sure you worried. I mean, I'm sure what I mean, I'm sure everybody tried. Nothing is ever either or.
They're well, Sandy, always. For all the years that I sat here and I took phone calls in the 90s, right, when we didn't have a football team and then we were going to build a football state, like all of this, right? Are we going to get an arena? How are we going to replace Harvard Place? We spent last week with Ron Cassie at Baltimore Magazine talking about all of these issues. They all need money. But the gambling thing for me for all of the years when I started going to Vegas in the 90s, chasing girls and bands and concerts and all of that, and learning how to play blackjack. I didn't know anything about crap until I landed in Las Vegas in 1995. You take a book, you know, you're reading the book on the whole way out there and like all that. That money all went to the desert. It never came back. And that was the part when O'Malley was running the show, and you've always been a part of this, Delegate Sandy Rosenberg, our guest, that the money was going to Atlantic City. The money was going underground. The bookmaker salad was named and is served at the state fair based on these things. But legitimizing it,
was served at Sabatini's.
Oh, it was, of course, Sabatini's.
I knew Al Izella sat next to us at the ballpark.
I dined with Al once, and
Stadium.
He explained to me that he was the bookmaker, but not the shrimp in the salad. For all of the years of gambling and all that money leaving. Yeah, the casinos have been here, and obviously you were involved in Annapolis at that point too. Tell our audience over 15, 20 years what this money that Don voted against, that Martin voted against. I've been down to the casinos to see shows and whatnot. I was down at MGM at Bruno Mars last month on the Crab Cake Tour. What is that money doing?
Well, a significant percentage of it is going to education, public pre-K to 12 education. And it has enabled us to increase funding for education for principally since we had legalized gambling. And we've now made that even more precise with the constitutional amendment that is where most, if not all, of the state's portion of the betting dollar goes. That's how we're going to finance the improvements is through significantly through lottery money, through slots money for Pimlico and Level. Well,
let's shift gears for a minute away from sports betting to another topic that's in the news every day. And Sandy, I have to admit, I didn't realize the key role, and I should, so I apologize to you. I didn't realize the key role that you played in codifying Roe v. Wade in the state of Maryland. So for our listeners, and Nestor said, we like to view this as a social studies class. So right now, there's great discussion, and you're an attorney and a law professor, so you can educate us. There's great discussion as to whether or not Texas and the inaction of the Supreme Court actually overrode Roe v. Wade or not. I know legal scholars probably like yourself saying that really didn't, but we're certainly on a dangerous slope. Here's my question, Sandy. Tell us what you did to codify it in Maryland. And because of your actions, are Maryland women protected regardless of the Texas law. There's a lot in there. So take Nestor and I as dummy law students and walk us through it.
Sure. My pleasure. 30 years ago, we were concerned that the Supreme Court was going to reverse Roe versus Wade. The three legislative leaders were, well, four, five, really. Myself, Senators Hollinger and Hoffman, Delegate Cher Lamont, working with the advocacy community, the pro-choice advocacy community. We wanted to pass a statute so that embodying the principles of Roe v. Wade, so that if the Supreme Court were to reverse Roe v. Wade, the Maryland law would be in effect and would not be affected by the fact that Roe v. Wade was no longer good case law. The three justices got together and saved Roe. So what we did turned out not to be essential then, but we passed a bill. It took us two sessions, because the first session, when it came to the floor in 1990, there was a hellacious filibuster in the Senate. Bill died. Five senators lost because of their support for the filibuster and their opposition to Roe.
So are you confident, Sandy? I want you to continue, but are you confident that was the deciding factor in their races? Because I think that may be relevant moving forward.
That was everybody's assumption at the time. Yes. So we clearly had the majority because of we had a referendum in the primary and general of 1992. So in 1990, so then in 1991, we introduced the bill, it passed, it was petitioned a referendum, and then we won on referendum 62-38%. Now, one of the things we did when we passed the codification of Roe, and we said the dividing line was viability. We didn't have three trimesters, as is the case in the Roe decision. We said, if in the doctor's medical judgment, not a judge, if in the doctor's medical judgment, the fetus is capable of sustained survival outside the womb, at that stage, it is very limited, only a very limited set of circumstances, despite what some of pro-life members of the legislature still say, very limited set of circumstances when an abortion can be performed post-viability.
Does that include rape and incest in Maryland, Sandy?
Yes.
Delegate Sandy Rosenberg is our guest. We move from you know, sports wagering right into Roe v. Wade. I wanted to stop at horse racing, Don. So when I do the transitions here through all of this, I thought, oh, lottery. They're a new sponsor here. Let yourself play. And we're sponsoring our Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We're going to have Brandon Scott with us over Coco's 2 weeks from now. But as part of the Baltimore Positive thing in Baltimore City, I am still the believer in the Preakness as our Super Bowl, as something that should fill hotel rooms, it should fill the city, and should stop the city for 5 days, and kids should be off school on Fridays, and everybody should be wearing pink, and we should be doing things that are marketing things that if your old pal, Mr. Schaefer, were to come back, you know, jumping with the rubber duckies into the wall, you know, doing things to celebrate this city. And I'm going to be talking to our mayor about that, but tell me where we are with this ongoing every year, back to when the lights came out, that idiot from Bel Air tried to punch the horse, which is 30 years ago now. We're still at Pimlico. We're still hi-ho. We're still holding on to the Preakness. But I always say it can't last forever, but I know you've put a lot of effort in this. I've had Bill Cole on many times talking about. So where are we in now, September 21? On this issue of getting that cool little glass thing built on the hill and making it multi-purpose and 364 other days of the year?
The Preakness is not moving. It's staying. And it will be part of a redevelopment jewel if we do things right. And I have every reason to believe that Bill Cole and all the other parties involved, including the neighborhoods on both sides of the track, that's what will be developed on that site. There will be just slightly less than half the site will be for racing purposes, and the Maryland Stadium Authority will own that site. That there will be a donation from the Jockey Club, who owns all of the site, to the Stadium Authority. And then my understanding is, my expectation, this Preakness Sunday, or the day after the Preakness, 2 years from now in 23, is when the wrecking ball will hit. And the expectation then would be that
So hold on, that's about 20 months from now, like that, give or take?
Well, it's the
two more Preaknesses is what you're saying.
Yeah, the first Sunday after the third Saturday in May in 23. Yes.
Okay.
That's when the construction will start. One of the things that's being discussed, and I'm not up to date on it, is moving, turning the track. The track currently is not parallel to Belvedere and Park Heights on the south and on the north. Now, I know this is a social studies class, but one of the things I did not learn in my geometry class at City College, even at City College, was that developers like rectangles. Now, Don, you were in county government. You probably knew that. Develop, because it's easier to develop on a rectangle. Okay. Now, when you drive down Key Highway, people are developing on a postage stamp, but that's because that's such a hot and wonderful neighborhood. Okay. But currently, if you walk to the track as I do, because I live in Cold Spring, Newtown, if you walk towards the track on Preakness Day, the fence of the track almost kisses the fence on Belvedere. So you would have much, if you kept the same track, you would have a much smaller sites for development on the south side. So one of the things being discussed is turning the track so it's parallel to both Belvedere and Northern Parkway. But once those issues are resolved, then we move forward. I mean, the Stadium Authority has already selected Air St. Gros, a local firm, to do the design for the track, for the racing site. This is being done in coordination with what happens at Lovely Laurel, because if there are going to be improvements there, how does that affect the racing schedule? But the smartest thing I did was the first thing I did on this, which was work through the Stadium Authority, because my initial involvement was to have the Stadium Authority do a study of the viability of Pimlico as a site for the Preakness. And so they do things well. They do them on budget. They do them on time. And they're also very responsive to legislators such as myself, and more importantly, to the community.
Delegate Sandy Rosenberg is our guest, along with former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller and Baltimore Positive. You know, as an adjunct to that, and Don, you can speak to this as well, because you were out at Caves Valley, and I know you like to talk about the success of the golf event a couple of weeks ago. Bleachers, right? Like, Sandy, did you go to the golf event?
No.
It looked like those bleachers were built into caves and they'd been there for a century, you know. It looked like it was built by the ancient Greeks, you know. And I think that Pimlico, and I see this at racetracks now, I've seen this on golf courses, the way that they bring seating in and can make it temporary for whatever we would want the Preakness to be in that way. I've sort of looked at this a different way as I've seen them bring temporary tracks into Pimlico to see what Kevin Plank's done in the middle of the infield over the course of time there, to believe that you don't need Churchill Downs with 74,000 seats, or Belmont, if you've been there, with this giant, they could run race cars in Belmont. It's so gigantic that we didn't need that kind of a facility to have a credible Preakness and a credible Preakness for them to make money and put on a great race and keep it here in Baltimore.
Well, there will be, what we've been told is, even in the midst of construction of the new facility, they still expect to run the Preakness at Pimlico. So the construction, if the ball hits on the 23rd of Preakness Sunday of 2023, and you're not, construction will take you, won't be done until Preakness Day or before Preakness Day in 2025, the Preakness can still be held at Pimlico and not move to Lovely Laurel in 24, because you'll be able to have this temporary seating that will be worthy of the Preakness.
Sandy, real quick on Pimlico, and then we have one or two other quick items just to get your take on it. First, do your Karnak thing and look into this crystal ball and tell me, it's not going to be me. So let me pick on my 14-year-old grandson, who's a stone's throw away from Pimlico over there at Gilman as a ninth grader. When he's 30 years old, 15 or 16 years from now, what's he going to be seeing in that Pimlico area? What's it going to look like when Jake says, you know, visits me in the old folks home and he says, geez, Pop, it wasn't like this when I was at Gilman. What's he going to see 15 years from now?
Well, he's going to see a 21st century racing facility. He'll see, I think things will be a little more restrained on the infield Preakness Day because they got to preserve it for athletics and recreational use during the regular.
I got pictures from the 80s. I can share with them some scaffolding. No worries. I'll take care of that.
But you'll see Sinai is building a social services facility now, under construction already on the Belvedere side. They own the parking lot, if you will, on the Eastern Edge.
Time to get Neil Meltzer on the program. Well, Baltimore Positive with Neil.
They're going to expect, we hope they're going to have, expect they're going to have an outpatient facility on the Northern Parkway side of their property, but there's going to be residential property, commercial. And the first instance of all this will be, everything is all tied together, sports wagering, because there will be sports wagering at Pimlico when there's sports wagering everywhere else in Maryland later this fall or by the Super Bowl, whatever it may be. And we hope, we expect to work with the Jockey Club. They've got a unique situation. We're expecting them to build out, if you will, their sports wagering facility in a clubhouse that they know is going to be torn down in 2 years for the new facility. So we hope, but this will be people's first opportunity to come to Pimlico other than on Preakness Day.
Andy, how will it impact the neighborhood? You've been a neighborhood guy. You fought for this. What? How is it going to affect the families that live up Northern Parkway and along Belvedere? How will they be impacted?
Well, they will have input because working with Bill Cole and with Mayor Young, there is a neighborhood compact that meets on a monthly basis with all the parties involved to discuss issues so that we're not presented with a fait accompli, so that we have involvement above and beyond the involvement that we have on zoning and other uses of the site. But you're not going to have, except maybe for some concerts, you're never going to have Preakness Day crowds other than on Preakness weekend. Okay. So in terms of the disruption, not that significant, but we want to make it an asset and have it, you know, an attraction and for everybody on all sides. Also have it as a job center, both for construction and for operation, to make it particularly for people in the Park Heights community for jobs.
Are there going to be more racing dates there? We don't know. I mean, because there's not a whole lot of racing in Pimlico these days, really, over the last 25 years.
Well, to show you the benefits of having two tracks, when the track at Laurel was unusable, they raced at Pimlico. They may have missed a beat for a week or two, but they raced at Pimlico. So we would hope that, you know, that's a decision for the Jockey Club and the Racing Commission, but we would hope Pimlico becomes such an attraction. Now, Laurel will be rebuilt as well. This, what we did is let, you know, funds improvements at both sites. But we would hope that Pimlico becomes such a good attraction that the Jockey Club, as no longer the owner, but leasing the land or leasing the facility to use, you know, during race meets, would want to run there more than just Preakness, the abbreviated Preakness meet.
Is this your, you've had so many achievements. Is this the one goes on your gravestone? Is this your crowning achievement? Is this the one when you look back, you say, dang on it, I'm really proud of what we did to save Pimlico?
Well, a colleague, a lobbyist, but a friend, a former student, said to me once they could put on my tombstone, he killed the death penalty, he saved the Preakness.
That's a pretty good gravestone, I will tell you. Hey, real quick, and we'll let you run. In 2005, Delegate Sandy Rosenberg sponsored voter protection legislation in the state of Maryland. Did you ever?
You've done your research.
Well, every now and then, you know, blind squirrels. Did you ever?
He's a little obsessed with politics, Sandy. I don't know if you know that about him, you know?
I don't call it obsessed.
Did you ever imagine that 16 years later, we would be having a national debate over who and who should not vote?
Well, the language in that bill in 2005 was not mine. It was from federal law. In the wake of Florida, in the wake of all the, you know, the hanging chads and all the controversy about counting votes in the Gore-Bush election, the Congress got together and passed a bipartisan bill. I know this sounds very odd to the younger people listening, but that's what they did. And they passed the Help America Vote Act. So the heart of my Voter Protection Act is language that says, as in the federal, these are the, if you're challenged at election day, or if you're challenged when you, or what you have to present when you register, the same things that you could use under the federal law. And so it wasn't just things that only middle-class people have. You know, it wasn't just your driver's license or some government document. It was your rent bill or your BG&E bill. Okay, that's what we've operated under Maryland ever since. And I'm working on legislation for this coming session that would look at the revised bill, the bill that Senator Manchin is a co-sponsor of. What are the provisions in that bill that are different than existing Maryland law? And let's put that on the table for discussion here in Maryland.
Well, I hope we can have you come back, talk about that. We also want you to come back and update us on redistricting. I expect a little bit of brouhaha around that. And as Nestor always says,
is that called ungerrymandering? What is that?
Gerrymandering is in the eyes of the beholder.
There you go. There you go.
I just want to see straight lines and squares, Delegate Rosenberg. That's all I want to see.
One thing that, if I may, real quick, when Don Schaefer drew the lines and our district went out into the county, so Pikesville, we had parts of Pikesville. Okay. On a neighborhood issue, Pikesville had 8 state legislators working on its behalf, not 4. And that's a plus. So what I learned from that, and it's difficult to persuade people of this, is if enough of your community is in 2 districts that they have to listen to you, you're better off.
And those lines, Sandy, I totally agree with that. And there's one caveat. Those lines were contiguous. Those lines extending you from that Pimlico area out toward Pikesville, contiguous. And Master knows we had a good, we like our good buddy Michael Steele, but we had a good go round because I always say to him, Republicans love the idea of commissions if they only apply in blue states. Red states, not so much, but let's just do away with gerrymandering in the blue states, and then we can all sing kumbaya. And we said to our good buddy, the lieutenant governor, not quite so fast. So we get smarter every time you're here, Sandy. Nestor, what
Thank
do you,
you.
Say?
He is Don Mohler, my social studies advisor here and the former Baltimore County Executive Delegate Sandy Rosenberg. Next time, I hope we're not talking about 100 losses with the Orioles because I know how important it is to you. I hope both of you, for all the suffering since 66, you know, that there is a winner's circle for you, not for me. I mean, I'll participate. I'll drink the orange Kool-Aid or whatever, but I don't need them to win for me because it would feel better for you if they won. So
oh,
I fight.
Really
I am on the hill for you holding them accountable. I am.
It will feel really good for me when Grayson Rodriguez pitches a shutout in game seven and Adley Rutschman goes deep twice. Yes, that will feel good.
I hope we all live long enough for that. I really do. In the meantime, let us all pray for Lamar Jackson. Yes. On behalf of Don Mohler, I am Nestor Aparicio. Reminder, the Maryland Crab Cake Tour is making its way to Coco's on the 8th. We're going to have Mayor Brandon Scott with us. We're going to have some other guests. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. On behalf of all of our sponsors, including our friends at State Fair, our friends at Fadley's and Costas and all over town, we're going to be visiting with lots and lots of folks. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.